back to another episode of Protein Ramblings. It's just myself and Naomi here again today.
How do?
And we're back, as promised, to discuss about the media that scarred us as children.
This is a rich topic.
Yeah, be it books, be it film, be it a poster on a wall.
Yes, yeah.
So
there's a lot to cover.
Yes, yes, there is.
How do we come up with this? We were talking about Prince Philip dying, and I think you just like messaged me. We should talk about the stuff that scarred us as kids.
It came up way before we were talking about.
I can't remember what it was. It was really out of the blue, but we were both like, yes.
I can't see any connection between Prince Philip dying and the media that scarred us in any shape or form.
No, that's fair.
But I do think, and I think it came up before that.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
So where do you want to start? Really? What media do we have in common that scarred us?
I mean, think we discovered today a little bit of Red Dwarf.
Yeah, so okay, because this one's funny and silly, really. So I am a huge Red Dwarf fan. I mean, like, diehard. Like I've mentioned on previous episodes, I picked up a bit of a Scouse twang because I watched so much Red Dwarf. Like, I just consumed it voraciously, but that wasn't always the case. So when I was really, really young, my cousin Lee had a Red Dwarf poster, like a Despair Squid poster on the wall. It was referencing the episode in season 4, Despair Squid, or mm-hmm. Back to Reality episode. And it was like a rendition of the Despair Squid, which you never actually see in the episode.
No, I was just thinking that, because when you said it was a Despair Squid poster, I was thinking, I don't actually know what that would look like.
Well, that's the thing. You don't see it in the show at all. It's just like, all you see is an inky, blobby mess. Yeah, it just terrified me. It was just this like creepy, creepy poster. Mm. And for years and years and years and years and years and years and years, well, not years, no, it's not, I'm over-exaggerating, that's a great
period point. Of time.
For a long time, I was just like, I'm not watching Red Dwarf. No. It wasn't until like Lee was just like, right, no, this is ridiculous. We are sitting down and watching this. And I was like, oh my God, what a dick. It's like genuinely, so our American listeners out there may not know Red Dwarf because it did get it got an American pilot, but it didn't really go very far. If you're proper sci-fi nerdy, you'll probably know it. If you don't, go check it out. It's, in my opinion, the greatest British...
British sitcom?
Yes.
Yeah, that, to a point. Like, basically after season 6.
Stop, don't watch after season 6. If you must, season 7's okay. And that's the best I can say. It's got some points that do make me laugh, but not worth it.
Yeah.
Not in the grand scheme of things.
I didn't watch it until I was an adult. I think I was at university when I first watched it, in fact. I wouldn't say there was a scarring experience, but my secondary school English class, there was a poster on the wall of one of the book covers. Was it called The Last Human? The Last Man?
The Last Human.
And it's like a mountain of skulls and bones, and then there's just this silhouetted figure at the top.
Yeah,
and
which is Lister.
Being someone who as a kid wasn't into sci-fi and was very sheltered from horror, I was just like, well, this is clearly not for me. This is going to be some horrific post-apocalyptic cannibalistic murder book. I'm not allowed to read that kind of thing.
I will say that the Red Dwarf supplemental media, the Red Dwarf supplemental media, the books and the audio play are a little bit darker in tone. They're still very, very funny. They're still a comedy.
They're still great. It's the same kind of humor, isn't it?
Yeah, completely. Yeah. And the audio plays are really worth checking out because Chris Barry reads them and he does the funniest impressions of everybody.
He does everyone so well. Though that's the thing. Like, I didn't realize it was just him and not Craig Charles doing Lister.
He does a great Lister. He does a really good Crichton. He does a really good Holly. Mm. It's a very cohesive storyline in the audio plays. So it actually has a proper ending, and it's really good. Yeah. In terms of the story structure, it's actually better than the TV show.
To my knowledge, still no cannibalism.
There is no cannibalism in Red Dwarf in its entirety, as far as I can remember. I guess the closest thing, I mean, there's lots of jokes that Lister eating curry is like being a cannibal because he's so on the balls.
So that's a fairly mild one. Like that, I don't think that left any lasting scars.
No, I mean, quite the
big Red Dwarf fans.
Yeah, quite the opposite. Yeah. Quite the opposite, in fact.
What was your first or your earliest thing that you were like, this has fundamentally changed me as a human being?
So for me, I think Animals of Farthing Wood has got to be up there.
Mm, probably for a whole generation of British kids.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it existed much outside the UK.
No, I'm not sure.
but it genuinely, like, just from the opening title scene, like, alone.
I read the books before I saw the TV series.
Never read the books. Never
the
once.
Books are even fucking worse because there's so many more of them. There's so much time to get dark and sad. And
we've got weird. So many cats in the studio right now.
They've come to listen to us talk about animals dying.
Sorry, cats.
Sorry. But
yeah, I only watched the TV show because I didn't want to read the books after I saw the TV show.
Well,
I
was just like, fair. It's a good choice. I mean, yeah. The TV show does cover the plots of some of the books, like Fox's Feud is one of the books where he has the rivalry with the other Fox family in the park. And
so you've memorized this way more.
Well, I mean, I had so many of them and I read them repeatedly, even though they horrified me. Okay. A lot of Colin Dan's books are like that, though. They're all about animals just having a bad time.
Right.
Like animals you wouldn't expect. There was one of his books that was called The Ram of Sweet River. Doesn't that sound nice? It's about sheep.
I guess.
These sheep get driven away from their nice, safe farm by a fire and they go wild. And there's like, they have to deal with a farmer's dog that's gone feral and is trying to kill them. And there's inter-flock rivalries between the ram and his son. And lots of people, lots of sheep die.
Oh, God.
And then they go home because they're like, you know what? Being wild is shit.
Yeah, okay.
So they go back to their farm. But the Farthing Wood books, the one that really kind of did it for me was The Fox Cub Bold.
Okay.
Which is a later one. So it's the child of the original fox from The Animals of Farthing Wood. And he leaves White Deer Park because he wants to be like a free fox.
I vaguely remember this because I'm sure they did this in the TV show.
They might have
as well.
Done. He goes off, he has adventures, he has horrible times. Like, it's really shit. You know, he's starving and hurt. It's so, oh God, it's so sad.
Yeah,
and then he meets a lady fox, yes. And they fall in love. And he's like, now I'm going to have baby foxes. I should take them back to the park where it's safe. And so they go back to the park. But before he gets into the park, he dies.
Yes.
And it was the first book I'd read as a kid where an animal, like the hero died. It was not just a character. It was like, you'd been with this poor fox for so long. And the end of the book is him just dying, like, meters from safety. And my parents were like, you know, you don't have to read these books if you don't want to, because they're obviously upsetting you. And I was like, no, it's fine. I'm going to buy the next one.
Okay. Yeah. So on the, like, Animals of Farthing Wood was just dark. And I think it was intended to be dark. I mean, having read a lot
of Colin Dan's books, he never shied away from like, look, real life sometimes ends in death.
Yeah, so...
In fact, real life always ends in death.
That's,
he wasn't afraid to say that.
Again, like we were saying with Mark in the last episode of Ulysses, life lessons maybe kids need to know, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody dies.
Everybody dies.
Everybody dies. On the subject of foxes. On the subject of foxes, Fox and the Hound.
Yeah, see, I never saw that. Probably just as well.
Don't.
I have a lot of fox-related trauma in my childhood.
Like, foxes are an inherently cute animal.
Yeah, everyone loves foxes. They're great. They're cheeky little scallywags. You've got fantastic Mr. Fox.
Apart from when they're having sex and they sound like demon spawn from hell.
Yeah, but everybody's got their thing, right?
It's because foxes' penises... barbed.
They barbed like cats.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they don't talk about that in the Animals of Farthing Wood.
Probably for good reason. There are some lessons that maybe kids don't need to know just yet.
Yeah, agreed.
But yeah, The Fox and the Hound is like a lot of the Disney of that era, although it may end relatively happily. Fuck me, is it dark as shit in the middle?
A lot of, well, I mean, with a lot of Disney stuff, obviously it's based on fairy tales, and fairy tales are hella dark. They're meant to be. They're morality stories about what happens if you go off with court predators or if you don't do your chores or whatever. They're meant to instill fear in the listener and teach them an important life lesson. So Disney films, the adaptations of fairy tales, are inherently dark. They're not like the original story of Sleeping Beauty is horrific.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way they could have adapted that to its full horror and still been allowed to show it to kids. But The Fox and the Hound sounds nice.
Yeah, I mean, but if you watch the trailer for Fox and the Hound, even the trailer was dark. I didn't really see it till I was an adult, so I'm saying it scarred me. I didn't really see it till much later on in life because I kept seeing the trailer for it and I was like, fuck no.
Yeah.
No to all of that. Like Bambi. I've never seen Bambi.
Do you remember, when you were a kid, did you ever get shows that were just like clips of Disney shows? They'd come on holidays and they'd be like, here's a scene from whatever.
I had lots of Disney videos in the day when they used to advertise all the films at the beginning of the video. We didn't have
Bambi because it upset my older brother, I believe, so we didn't have that. But he has issues with sharks as well from childhood and llamas.
sharks, great parenting. I mean, sharks is sharks a sensible...
Well, no, it's not, because how often are you going to encounter a shark in your day-to-day life?
Well, yeah, there is
You have to go out of your way to find a shark. How often are you
going... Yeah, I was going to say, how often are you going to encounter... But llamas are just friendly.
When he went to Chile, he did get chased by a llama. So he
would go to Chile.
But anyway, so we didn't have Bambi because I think he'd seen it and it upset him. But we had seen, you'd get those clip shows and you'd see the clips of Bambi. And even just the clips were enough for me to be like, I'm out. I don't need this.
No.
I'm young.
Yeah, yeah. I don't need this in my life right now at all.
So no, I've never seen Bambi either. Like, I know it. Obviously,
I mean, everybody knows it.
You learn the story by osmosis. But
yeah, Bambi's mother dies. It's horrible. She's killed by a hunter. Hunting's bad.
There's a fire.
Yeah, there's a fire. Talking, like, there's a lot of animal trauma. Another one that was kind of traumatic, but I did love, was The Land Before Time.
Yes, I used to watch that, like, once a week.
But devastatingly
sad. Really sad.
Especially because, you know, like, even though they may, like, kind of survive, it's all futile. They all got wiped out.
It's the real message.
Dinosaurs were shit.
Yeah, man. Like, fuck
they
those
had
guys.
No survival instincts.
They had their chance.
Yeah. Now it's us, and look what we've done. We've only mildly destroyed the planet.
And dinosaurs are technically still around in the form of birds. So, you know, who's the real evolutionary winner?
So, lots of animal. Sticking with the animal theme as well, and it's something that you've not seen. We've been discussing it a lot over the last few days. It's the Neverending Story. So Neverending Story is amazing, but it is dark, and there's a number of things in that film which are kind of dark. Like, he's a friendly character when you first come across him. There's the rock muncher who's terrifying. He's just this giant rock beast that eats rocks, but like, until you realize
made of rock.
Yeah.
So this is cannibalism,
I guess.
Yeah.
I never really thought of it like that.
Something
so
else to dwell on.
he's really kind of like an intimidating figure when you first see him, but he's really friendly. The real like traumatic bits of Neverending Story are when Atreyu's horse Artax dies, because the way he dies is so brutal and traumatic.
Yeah.
He gets caught in mud.
Mud, it's
like
not,
like quicksand.
Equivalent. So obviously, as discussed, I've never seen this. I don't really know why. It's the kind of thing I would have been into as a kid. Like, it falls into that kind of labyrinth, Dark Crystal.
Yeah,
Princess
it's very
Bride
much
of
that
films,
that ilk of film.
And
yeah.
I think I've seen the second one.
Really? Because that's nowhere near as good.
But I haven't seen the original. But this scene of this horse dying is so stamped into our generation's collective psyche that I've seen that scene hundreds of times in like GIFs and video clips. So I know what it's like. But it has no impact on me because I didn't see it as a kid. I'm just like, obviously it's sad a horse dies. But, you know, we grew up on the Animals of Farthing Wood. Horses are going to die.
Yeah. And also I grew up on the Grand National. So horses are going to
die. Yeah.
But it still was like, in the context of the film, it's just like, everything's going wrong for Atreyu. It's that point in, you know, the hero's journey where you're like, oh no, like it's the reckoning.
Yeah,
point.
The dark night of the soul kind of thing.
Exactly. And Atreyu's just lost. And he's lost his horse, his best friend, and everything just looks bleak as shit, basically. What I found to be even more scarring from Neverending Story was the Nothing.
Yeah, see, I don't know about this.
So the Nothing is the big bad of the entire show. And it's the whole thing with the Nothing is you don't see much of it for the most of the film. It's basically just eyes in a black cave.
Ooh, okay.
And it's this giant, when you do kind of see, it's basically, if I'm remembering right, because I've not seen it for years, it's like some giant, big, black wolf-like creature, and it's animatronic type puppetry, which in and of itself is just generally quite unnerving.
Yeah.
Like, claymation stuff has got some shit to answer for in my childhood as well. Definitely. But the Nothing just throughout that entire film is this omnipresent force that's impeding the good guy and threatening to destroy. I want to call it Eternia, like the world, but it's not in the slightest, but I'm sure it's something akin to that name. And yeah, it's fucking horrible.
Yeah. See, this is the thing. Like, I think we are going to watch it because we're going
to
do the thing where I watch stuff I didn't watch.
Yeah. And
I don't know
story
if watching these things as an adult, it's going to hit different. I mean, I didn't watch The Exorcist until I was an adult. And I was like, what the fuck was all the fuss about? Like, why are my parents so adamant that I should never watch this film? It's stupid.
It doesn't have the same impact.
No.
nowadays that it did then.
Yeah.
And I also think that somewhat generational in a way, because let's be honest, there's a lot more atheism in our generation, especially in the West.
There is, and I think there are fewer firsts as well. Like, to talk about The Exorcist again, when it came out, there hadn't been a horror film like that. It was a very new thing, and people's reactions to it were very kind of raw and visceral because there was nothing else like it. Whereas now we live in an age where most of the stuff you want is a few finger clicks away, right? You can see pretty much anything you want to, so it's much harder to be shocked and upset, I guess.
Yes, completely agree with that. Yeah, so generally speaking, there's not a lot of firsts.
No, it's harder to shock. When I think about the things I've seen as an adult that have really hit me, it's stuff that I would not have had access to normally, like Japanese horror films, like Audition specifically. You know, when I saw that for the first time, literally I'd never seen anything like it. And I watched a lot of it from behind a pillow. I was 18, 19 when I watched that, and I was terrified.
Well, let's be fair. Audition is a creepy, creepy film.
On so many levels.
Like, it's fantastic. And anyone out there listening who's not seen Audition, definitely go and see it. It's a must-see from the Asian kind of horror genre. I would recommend it over Ringu and The Grudge.
Yeah, I would, but I would also recommend you do have a pillow handy. Because that's the only way I got
through. Very, very squirmish.
I attempted to watch it twice, and both times I had to hide behind a pillow.
Really? See, I really enjoyed that film. I didn't have any issues watching that film. But then, I don't really have any issues with anything.
No, I mean, I don't think I'm particularly squeamish. Now.
I mean, there is a certain ambiance to the entire film that just puts you in an air of discomfort.
It's a very unsettling film right from the start. Because even the premise, the very beginning setup where he's like, the guy's like, I'm going to find a wife, but I'm going to do it by telling people that they're auditioning for ballet. Like, you know, it's creepy from the get-go, and then it just escalates so hard and so fast.
So we've got quite a few things that scarred us in common, but we've got some differences as well.
Yeah.
So, go on, Superman 3, let's go.
Oh, God. I can't even... Okay, so I don't know how old I was when I saw this, but some things are very stamped in my mind. I was at my grandparents' house. They had this farmhouse. We must have been there for a family hall. It must have been like Christmas or something, because that tended to be the only time we would go there because of being in the army.
Yeah.
And that's also the time of year where you get films like Superman 3 on TV, I guess.
Yeah, typically the Superman films would be around Christmas or Boxing Day or one of the holiday things.
I was young. I was definitely preteen.
Yeah.
And Superman 3 was on, and I was fine with it. Didn't really care about it, but I was fine with it up until near the end of the film. There's a scene where a woman is pulled into a machine. I can't remember the context. She's pulled into a machine and she's made into a cyborg. Right?
If I remember rightly, Richard Pryor plays the bad guy in that. He's not the bad guy, but he's like sidekick of the bad guy. Yeah. It's been a long time since I watched it. But there's this like AI or machine thing, and it's almost got an air of the Japanese about it in the way the cables kind of wrap around.
Yes, very much so. Yeah. So she pulled into this machine and she's turned into a cyborg. She's coated in metal.
That's already a word.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm trying to figure out what your format too is.
I was trying to, like, mechanical and tentacles. Mechanicals. Menticles. Or is that just mental tentacles?
Maybe. Your menticles. Yeah.
You're crazy for tentacles. Your menticles.
Stop interfering with my childhood trauma. She's pulled in this machine. She's made into a cyborg. And she comes out and she just starts, like, gunning for people. And I don't know if it was... It was just the most horrific thing I'd ever seen at that point in my life. It terrified me. I think you can't really analyze these things as a kid, but looking back, it was like, you know, the loss of bodily control and autonomy and that sense that something can make you do things against your will or take away your humanity. But as a kid, I was just like, that's fucking terrifying.
The thing is, this is something that stuck with you to this day because you hate robots.
I do. Like, I can watch stuff with robots. Like, I've watched all the Terminator films. Yeah, I didn't freak out, but I don't fucking like them. I wouldn't have a Roomba in the house.
Much to my chagrin.
But yeah, no, I slept with the lights on for weeks after this, and I went through this massive dilemma of whether to have my bedroom curtains open or not, because I was like, if they're closed, if she's at the window, she can't see me. Mm-hmm. But if they're open, if she comes to the window, I can see her and I can get away, as long as my bedroom door is open. But if my bedroom door is open, she can come up the stairs and get me. And I had this like complete mental panic every night for weeks afterwards. I've never watched that film again.
Would you watch it again?
I don't know.
Because like the thing is,
it's probably not as bad as I remember at all.
No, I don't think it is. And I think upon a rewatch, you'd probably realize how dated the effects are. And
even things I saw that reminded me of it, like there's an episode of Defenders of the Earth, which I love, where there's a very similar storyline.
I know exactly which one you mean.
There's like the cyborgs that want to become human.
Human, yeah. And they're like, oh, they kidnap the Defenders of the Earth kids, and they're like, we're going to take your body, like, and it's not like we're going to put our brains, they want to cut their skin off and put it on them.
Exactly.
Make them human, because the woman falls in love with Flash,
yes,
doesn't she?
Yeah.
But that is actually something that because I had a VHS of Defenders of the Earth, and that was one of the three episodes that was on that VHS. Yeah. And Jesus Christ, that episode was
surprisingly dark.
For Defenders of the Earth, definitely.
And seeing, I saw that after I saw Superman 3, and it just kind of brought it all back home again. That was just like, this is horrific, and this is how humanity will die.
On the kind of robot topic, and I may have touched on it in previous episodes, but I had a massive issue with RoboCop.
Well, that's not surprising if you saw it as a child.
Well, I did.
Lot of the stuff we've talked about is for kids or, you know, with parental guidance, okay, but RoboCop is not for kids.
No, it's definitely not. And I think the problem was as well, I was ill, so I was like fever dreaming, like I mentioned before, in the Ulysses episode, I think it was. But yeah, that really stuck with me for a long time. Like, couldn't watch the RoboCop cartoon, which arguably shouldn't have been a thing
because again, I can't say this enough, RoboCop is not for kids.
No, not at all. I mean, to be honest, actually, if you watch maybe RoboCop 3, It gets a lot less.
Yeah, that diminishing return.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a lot less of that real hyper violence. Mm-hmm. It did become more. I won't say family friendly, but there was definitely a little bit more of a toned down hint to try and appeal a bit more to teenagers because of the popularity of the toys and everything.
See, again,
like that.
I didn't watch RoboCop until I was an adult. In fact, I think we watched it together.
Really?
I mean, I can't remember when. It was a while ago, but I definitely hadn't seen it before I watched it with you.
Okay. It's a classic.
It's a good film.
And it's a great film. It's that kind
of hyper-violent, stylized 80s action flick. But again, it just doesn't hit the same way.
Don't watch the remake. It's fucking shit. Sorry, like really emphasize how bad that film is.
But yeah, again, it doesn't hit the same way. It's like, obviously, as a kid, you shouldn't have seen it. But
No.
I'm guessing, unlike me, there weren't really many limits on what you were allowed to watch.
No, not really. I mean, I saw Alien when I was really, really young. Yeah. Didn't bother me at all either. I love that film from the first. Like, it was quite funny because I watched it with my mom. She was just like, oh, come on, let's watch Alien. I want you to see this film. And she's there jumping and hiding, like, oh, and I'm like, this is fucking awesome. Like, I want more of this. And I think we watched all three Alien films in a day. And I was just like, well, yes. Spent.
Yeah, see, we didn't get to watch anything like that. I mean, I don't even know. I mean, Jurassic Park was probably about the level of violence my parents were okay with us seeing. I know my older brother used to sneak off to friends' house to watch horror films.
Yeah.
And I had Stephen King books I had to hide under my bed because my parents were like, you shouldn't be reading this kind of thing. It's going to scar you. And maybe they were right.
Were there any books that kind of left a lasting impact on you other than the Animals of Farthing Wood books?
Animals of Farthing Wood, yes. The only other one that really it stuck with me to this day is a book we had to read for English in school. Maybe 15, 16 years old.
Yeah.
Called Brother in the Land.
Don't know it.
So in retrospect, it's not a long book. It felt long at the time because we were reading like a chapter per week. And it was a painful experience. It's about the aftermath of a unspecified nuclear incident in England. I think it's a war.
Sorry, say.
No, you know I can't say it.
Sorry, say it again.
Nuclear.
Yes, thank you.
Nuclear.
Not nuclear.
Nuclear war. But I think it's set in Sheffield. A bomb drops on and it's like the aftermath, basically.
Oh, was there a TV show of this?
I don't know, but there are a lot of things that are like this.
I have vague recollections of a TV show from, I think it might have been around the 70s.
I mean, you had stuff like Threads. That was a very similar premise.
Yeah, maybe I'm thinking of Threads.
So, I mean, in the book, you're following this young kid. Mm-hmm. I think his name's Danny. His mother is killed outright, if I recall correctly. His dad and his younger brother and him survive, but obviously there's radiation sickness to deal with.
Yeah.
And because the first thing that happens in the aftermath of an apocalyptic event like that is gangs of roving criminals form, there's that kind of thing. He meets a girl called Kim, another survivor. They kind of have a relationship. In some ways, it's very typical YA stuff.
Yeah.
But it, because it's dealing with like radiation sickness and lawlessness and society collapsing and, you know, people are starving and they're dying and malformed babies are being born all the time. And towards the end of the book, you find out that Kim is pregnant. And okay. They're like, okay, for one thing, she's like 15, 16.
Yeah.
So that's not good. But for the other thing, you don't want to be pregnant in the fallout of a nuclear disaster. But it was just a very grim book. There was no hope at the end of it. The younger brother dies, they bury him, and there's this whole thing about all these people they've had to bury and how they have to move away from this town and try and find somewhere safe to have the baby and all that. Yeah, it's so fucking bleak. There's no light at the end of the tunnel.
That's a fairly accurate and apt way to portray a nuclear holocaust,
I'm
though,
not
I think.
Saying that it would be like rainbows and sunshine. But as a 15, 16-year-old, I don't know, something about that really...
Well, you have a real big issue with nuclear weapons in general,
maybe
right?
It's because of this book, I don't know. Because I certainly went through a phase as a teenager where I was very worried about nuclear war. Like, really worried.
Because there's that fantastic documentary that me and Dave watched, Trinity and Beyond, which is about all the nuclear testing that they've done.
Yeah.
And you fucking hated that.
Yes. And I'm correct.
I mean, it's true. Why have they blown up so many nuclear bombs?
Yes, why do you keep doing that? Why do we need to keep doing that?
Nuclear bombs in space, nuclear bombs in the water. Like, my favorite things about like when they do the test under the water and they're like, holy shit, we didn't factor in that the pressure of the water was going to compound the explosion and make it even fucking worse. It was just like, you dumb fuck.
Yeah, no, I did go through a period where it was a real concern of mine. And then I read Tommyknockers by Stephen King, where the main character is also really preoccupied with nuclear disarmament and all that kind of thing. So that didn't help.
See, I didn't read Tommyknockers until after I saw the film.
In retrospect, they're both shit.
Yeah, it's fair. And there was one bit of the film, because I saw that quite young, that really stuck with me and gave me... Like, I already had issues with dentists because of dental mishaps and things, but the scene in that film where he's pulling out his own teeth.
Yeah,
that fucking really... Mm. I don't like tooth shit.
No.
Like, there's an episode of The X-Files as well. I can't remember if it was when Gillian Anderson, like Scully, or when Mulder's abducted, but it shows them like going to drill into their teeth. And, oh no, it's Dwayne Barry. Mm. Like, they're drilling into Dwayne Barry's teeth, and I'm like, fuck all that.
Should I tell you what the single most horrifying thing I've seen on the internet is? A toddler's skull. Because they have like three rows of teeth and they're all like, they're under the nose and back of the jaw. It's horrific. It's like some little alien thing. And like, my baby teeth didn't fall out. My adult teeth started coming in over the top of my baby teeth. And when I see the picture of the toddler skull with all the teeth, that's kind of what I imagine is still there now. It's like all these teeth just kind of waiting to spring out.
It is kind of grotesque. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I had the same problem. I had teeth come through. I had three sets of teeth.
I only had the two.
Yeah, I was free. I was weird. that's why my teeth are all like, I should have had like orthodontic treatment and braces
and
shit.
Yeah, see, I did. They started on my knee straight away.
I was a write-off, so.
But then I had to go through the childhood trauma of having asthma, glasses, and braces when I was like 10 to 16 years old.
Oh, lovely.
Speaking of scarring experiences.
Yeah, sounds it. So for me, in terms of like things that, I mean, the biggest scarring thing for me, again, I mentioned it in Ulysses, but I can't emphasize how much I was terrified of this as a child and how much it impacted me for so much of my childhood. Jeff Wayne's War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
And by proxy, also the 1950s War of the Worlds film.
Mm.
But so the Jeff Wayne audio, it's not really an audio, I guess it's kind of an audio drama, but it's also a musical.
Yeah, it's like a rock opera almost.
Yeah, I guess that's almost what you could call it, is a rock opera. It's fantastic.
Amazing. Yeah.
It's like, I love it now, really do. But when I was a kid, I was just intrinsically, like to my core, petrified of it being, I almost want to say alien abduction, but it's almost not alien abduction at the same time. It was just the concept of aliens.
Yeah.
Which is weird because I didn't have an issue with Alien.
No. So when you saw, just to derail a little bit, when you saw Alien, did that kind of put an end to you being afraid of aliens? Or
yeah.
Just kind of register it differently?
No, I mean, like, I was still having issues with aliens at that point, but it did, I think, yes, it registered differently. Because the aliens in that aren't intelligent in the same way, right? I mean, they're not dumb, like, but they're the same in kind of intelligence as a pack predator, you know?
Yeah.
So I think in for that sense, it registered differently because it's not that, you know, much vast superior intellect
that can be malevolent to you personally.
Yeah, and that could be malevolent to you at a species-wide level and could target you. Do you know what I think the big turnaround for me was? Like, because I was still young when it came out. Independence Day.
Mm.
That was the like, hey, no, we fight back, man.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that helps as well. Like at the end of Alien, you know, Ripley and Jonesy are safe and they
ish.
Won. It's safer. Maybe that helps.
For like a while.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, it used to be to the point that my parents, when I was like, it wouldn't go to bed, they just put it on. And as soon as that dun 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 hit, I'd be like, fucking up the stairs.
That is some negative reinforcement.
Yeah, like my parents were all in on the negative reinforcement kind of thing. But like it really, really stirred me to my core. And as I mentioned in the Ulysses episode, I used to have to sleep facing the door and the window. So where the way my bedroom was laid out, the door into the bedroom was right by the big window. And I had one of those bunk beds that was a single bed on top and a double bed at the bottom. And I used to sleep on the double bed at the bottom, right up at the back corner, because there was a little bit of an alcove where the bed was. And I'd be right up at the back and I'd have to just kind of like, I'd be sleeping with everything but my eyes poking over the covers. And I would stare at the door and the window until I fell asleep.
Yeah.
I couldn't turn my back to it. I just couldn't.
This was me with the Superman cyborg lady. Completely the same. I mean, obviously, I still sleep completely cocooned to protect myself from monsters.
Because they're always there.
You never know.
It's true. It's true.
Just because there haven't been any yet.
No, they haven't. I mean, not like, it depends if you want to count people like, you know, people abduct people.
No, I'm
know,
talking like, about literal monsters.
Oh, literal, like.
Actual monsters.
I mean, there's an argument to be made that those people are like the closest you'll ever get to actual monsters.
Yeah,
maybe.
But it's funny. When I was a kid, I wasn't scared of like, serial
I never had Stranger
or...
Danger.
No,
I never had
all.
Stranger Danger.
Not at all. No.
None of the PSAs that were supposed to make you scared of strangers ever worked.
And I don't know if this
worked.
Is an army family thing or just a British 80s family thing, but my parents were quite casual about, oh, we'll just leave the pram in the garden so she can get some fresh air and shutting the door, you know?
Yeah,
whatever. Like, I remember one time being separated from my mum in a shop and having a little bit of like, oh no, I don't know where my mum is. But she found me like 5 minutes later. And that was the height of any problems.
Yeah, so for me, like... I grew up in Manchester, obviously up north, and so streets of terraced housing. And the way our street was laid out is you had the street of terraced housing, and then everyone had their backyards, and then you could go outside the backyard, and there was an alleyway, and then there was the wall that you could climb up because it was kind of like shoddy masonry brick type stuff. And then there was a massive park called Coronation Park in Rackleth, up north. And we used to have like street barbecues where like all the families had kind of usually outside mine and my next door neighbor, because like my mum and Deisha, who was the mum next door, they would usually be the kind of instigators of it. And then you have like neighbors from a bit further down the street, and everyone would just be sat up outside those backyards, and they just let the kids go running off into the night in the park.
Yeah.
You know, we'd be running all over the park
with us. I mean, we're normally on army camp, so it's slightly different, you know, and there would be a kind of like, we have to come back before dark, and you have to stay on the army camp.
Well,
there was no real oversight.
I mean,
that.
This was when like there were no phones, so the only way you knew your mum wanted you home is if you could hear her shouting out
of
the back door.
They had no idea where you were. If you said you were going to so and so's house and you didn't, they couldn't tell.
And I used to do that all the fucking time.
I mean, I was a good girl. And actually, I didn't go out and play a lot. I was in my room playing with toys.
See, I did go out and play a lot. And we had like so it was actually directly outside my house. We had a tree that we made into a tree house. Like proper, like not proper, proper, proper tree house. Like, you know, like walls and shit.
Yeah.
But that's why I've got one of the scars on my legs. Because we just got nails and nailed them into the tree as footholds to climb up. And I slid down once, just raked my leg over the knee. Raked my leg over the knee?
Yeah.
Over the nail. And just like opened myself up. And we used to have a rope swing hanging off there. And we nailed a few platforms up there so we had places to sit. And that was directly out the back of my house. Like pretty much my mum could see me in the tree from the kitchen window kind of thing. But then there were like, it was kind of like bamboo, kind of like what's rhubarb that grew all over this park, but it wasn't rhubarb, it was like a weed, but it had that same kind of
thing.
And we used to hack into that and then make a little like patch in the middle that would be like a little den as well. So yeah, we were allowed to just go off and do our own thing. There was a home for battered wives and their kids on the other side of the park, and we used to get into fights with the kids from there all the time. In fact, we got into such a bad fight once the police got called, and the only reason that we didn't get any like charges pressed or anything was because my mum ended up getting a date with the arresting officer.
Very convenient. That's good parenting.
Yeah. It's like, don't prosecute my child. I'll go out with you.
So yeah, it's like, I guess the things that I was scared of as a kid, probably not the same things that my parents were scared of for me as a kid.
No, I think this is what leads me on to what I wanted to talk about was what do you think kids today, like, because, you know, we consume quite a lot of media that's probably intended for kids these days.
Yeah, I would say so.
And I can't really think of anything. Obviously, I'm seeing it through an adult eyes, but I can't think of it. Like,
there's nothing like,
if you think of the things that are big, like the films.
I think the benchmark for me is, I am not aware of anything like Watership Down.
No, God, no. Or Animals of Farthingwood. Yeah. Or, you know, going just the things like some of the films like Krull and
Dark Crystal.
What was the one with Tim Curry with the big
Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Like stuff that shit doesn't happen
anymore.
Films
like that anymore. No.
And like, you know, kids' movies these days are the Emoji Movie, the Trolls movie.
And obviously the real Disney empire, the kind of the Frozens and all that kind of thing. Which obviously, you know, we had Disney.
But I think they've definitely lightened the tone of Disney over the years.
I think so.
Although I will make an, like, and this scarred me as an adult, I think, because I grew up with them, but Toy Story 3 or 4, I think it's 3, the one where, like, they all nearly burn at the end.
That's the only thing I can think of that I think actually genuinely a young child, especially one who'd seen all those films and grown to love those characters, well, I can really see that having an impact.
Yeah, I mean, that had an impact on me as an adult because I'd grown up seeing those characters. Yeah. Like, I got choked up as a motherfucker at Toy Story 3. Like, not afraid to admit it, you know, hashtag man cry.
I don't know if the source material now is different. I was thinking, because the other one I have to talk about is The Last Unicorn.
Yeah. And so, like, something I never saw. Something I've never seen. Yeah. It always came across to me as a girl property.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. And I think it's, you know, it's fair to say I'm a nearly 38-year-old woman who loves unicorns. I have a unicorn tattoo. I have unicorn mugs. I have unicorn jewelry.
You're about to have a unicorn tarot deck.
Exactly, yeah. I love unicorns. And I haven't watched The Last Unicorn since I was a child because it affected me so deeply. And it's a film that I both love and hate at the same time. And it's like, it's a, in a lot of ways, a really beautiful film, not just in terms of animation, but in terms of the story. But it's also pretty heavy. There's a lot of themes in there that, as a kid, you're kind of, you only really can begin to comprehend as an adult. What did you do?
Just smack me elbow on desk.
Your new desk.
My new desk is out to get me.
So as a brief overview of the plot of The Last Unicorn, it starts with The Last Unicorn, who realizes that there are no other unicorns, and she goes off to find them, has some fairly traumatic adventures of her own on the way. She discovers that all the unicorns have been corralled by this giant creature called the Red Bull, and they've been driven into the sea. And on her way to try and find them, rescue them, she meets up with a wizard and a woman named Molly, who want to help her.
Yep.
And there's a point where I'm really glossing over it. If people haven't seen it, I recommend you either read the book or look it up on Wikipedia, because I'm really giving the cliff notes. They have an encounter with the Red Bull. The Last Unicorn nearly dies, and so Schmendrick the wizard turns her into a woman.
Schmendrick. That is just such a horrible mouthfeel to it.
Yeah, he turns her into a mortal woman to protect her, and then the Red Bull loses interest because she's not a unicorn anymore. They go to the castle of this king, King Haggard. He's the one who controls the Red Bull. He has this adopted son, and the unicorn and the son start to fall in love.
Is this where Red Bull pulled their name from?
I do sometimes wonder. But anyway, the climax of the film is they find the Red Bull's den in these caves under the castle.
Dingo.
The son, Prince Lear, is killed by the bull. And that spurs the unicorn to kind of, she changes back, she becomes a unicorn again, she charges and attacks the Red Bull, and all the other unicorns kind of emerge from the sea. And so the unicorns are back in the world.
Yep.
But because she's been mortal and she's been in love, she can't rejoin her own kind again because, you know, she's just been fundamentally changed. And as a kid, I was like, well, obviously this is scary. The Red Bull is terrifying. Mm-hmm. It's literally this giant ball of fire that kills unicorns. That's pure evil. And then you get the sadness of this poor
unicorn. This is why you're so against me drinking Red Bull.
Yes, that's the only reason. It's not the gout.
Yeah, FYI, like, context, I got gout from drinking too much Red Bull. Go me.
Yeah.
Life goals and all that.
Yeah, it's just the tragedy of this unicorn who has fought so hard against so many perils and barriers to be with her own kind again. And then when she can, she discovers that she's just too different from them now because of the experiences she's had. And you can't really pass that as a kid.
No, definitely not.
As a kid, I was just like, the Red Bull is terrifying and still made me sad. I won't ever watch it again. And as an adult, I'm like, oh no, the loss of innocence and the frailty of love. Oh no.
I'd say the loss of innocence is actually probably a good thing.
I think it depends how it comes about.
Well, I mean, I think my life improved greatly when I lost my innocence. I was open to more possibilities. Mm-hmm. Drugs.
See, I didn't go through drug phase, so.
The other one that, while you were talking, actually, that made, because the transformation thing you were talking about, the thing that jumped out to me was Ursula.
Oh, from the Little Mermaid. Yeah, that was a scary one. Yeah. Yes.
Like, Ursula was terrifying.
She really was. But like, she's someone I've come to view differently as an adult. Like, yeah, the film as a kid, I think we definitely had it on VHS. I think we maybe only watched it once or twice because the ending where she transforms into giant Ursula freaked me out too much. And my mum was like, okay, we're not going to watch this one again.
Yeah, that's the point. That's the part I'm on about. Like, yeah, it gets, when she's giant Ursula and the animators, Disney animation back then really heavily lent into the dark.
Yeah, definitely. When it was like, meant to be horrifying, it was.
It was, like, yeah. Maleficent in the original.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah.
Like, the green mist around her, the colour palettes and everything. Yeah. it was really, really impactful. And I think Disney got some shit. I mean, obviously Disney have a lot to answer for because fucking megacorp taking over the world, owning every piece of media you ever loved, ever. Including the fucking, like, they just own everything.
Yeah, basically.
But they have a lot to, I bet that there's a lot of kind of nested trauma.
There's probably a lot of kids who had their first nightmares and also their first crushes as a result of Disney films. Like, Fox, Robin Hood, a lot of girls' first crushes.
Yeah, well, it's always the anthropomorphic side of things as well.
Yeah,
so,
like Beast from Beauty and the Beast. Everyone's like, why did he turn back? That's shit.
I'm trying to think of Bonnie, because there was definitely a Bonnie Rabbit that I was like, yeah.
You're thinking of the Cadbury's Caramel Bunny?
No,
but
no.
She was pretty hot.
Yeah. I'm not thinking Lola Bunny.
Mm.
I don't know. There was definitely a bunny in there somewhere. Mm,
probably.
Maybe
it was in Robin Hood. I don't know.
No, because the bunny's like an old mom in that.
But yeah, I'm willing to bet most women my age had a thing for Fox Robin Hood at some point.
Fox Robin Hood as well was like, pretty dark when he's, you know, the kids are all poor and
yeah, some scary moments. Yeah, definitely. And then the ending, actually, where the castle is on fire and you don't know if he's escaped or not. Like,
yeah,
every time I watched that as a kid, even though I knew he was okay, I was still like, oh my god.
But yeah, I think in conclusion, there's a lot from our generation, and probably I actually don't know so much about maybe some of the 70s stuff, because there was a lot of, like, the nuclear.
Yeah, and there was a lot of weird stuff as well.
Yeah, but I definitely think our generation, I know maybe some of the Disney stuff was kind of transcendent across a couple of generations.
Yeah.
But it's definitely not as prevalent today. I think kids today are watching.
It seems like the 80s was a period where it was like, look, we're going to fuck up the kids.
Yeah, like,
and then in
general,
the 90s, they started to get into the more kind of edutainment. Like, hey, you have to have a moral message at the end.
Like,
so
the PSAs and
G.I.
Exactly.
Joe.
Yeah.
It can't be too devastating. Otherwise, the kids won't remember the moral
knowing lesson. Is half the battle.
Apparently so.
Yeah, I think in general, like, there was something around the 80s that we were just like, hey, do you know what? Let's really fuck up our kids.
I think if you look at the culture, more in America, where in America they were coming into an era where Stranger Danger was a big thing. They had the Satanic Panic going on. And
I mean, they had Charles Manson.
Yeah, a lot of moral panic around the safety and well-being of children.
Yeah,
that was reflected
definitely.
In the media. And then they were like, oh, actually, we've gone too far that way. We need to kind of rebound into something a bit lighter.
Speaking of the cultural shift, the thing that I like about in Japan, it's like they want to scare their kids because it's good for them. But
yeah,
it's like when you're saying about Lance Archer, when he was playing a heel in New Japan and he'd be right up in the face of little tiny kids in their parents' arms and they'd be crying and the parents would be there laughing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's just like, yeah, no, they want me to do this because it's good for the kids.
Yeah, it's a bit of a rite of passage. Yeah, yeah, it's a different approach. I mean, I don't know much about the Japanese attitudes to horror as well. Obviously, horror in Japan
very different.
Very different. Yeah.
It's very psychological. Mm. Like, there's a lot more subtlety and nuance to it.
Yeah.
But they've got ghost stories. Obviously, mm-hmm. you know.
You get your yokai stories. Yeah,
exactly. They've got their ghosts. They've got their demons. And in a lot of ways, they're a lot more terrifying and elaborate than stuff we get in the West because their imaginations are way out
there. Yeah. And anything can become a yokai. So, you know, it's like even your bath mat is not safe.
So, like, did you see Ghost in the Shell when you were young?
I didn't watch that until I was a teenager.
Okay. And, like, how did that play in with your Superman?
I mean, it was difficult.
See, whereas me, I was just like, I want a cyber body.
I mean, for a while, I didn't want to watch things with robots in. I don't think as an older adult, I've shied away from it as much. I still think the robot uprising is probably how we're all going to die. Like, I'm not happy about advances in robotics, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's probably one of the more inevitable paths to our demise, I think.
Yeah, I'd say it's top two or three, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, the top one is obviously ecological.
Yeah.
And so then, this has been a downward episode, really.
We have to find a happy note to end on. What was your non-scarring childhood material?
Lots. Yeah. Like, lots. Ubiquitous as hell. I mean, we're talking about a lot of it on a fairly regular basis right now. Jason the Weird Warriors, Ulysses.
Care Bears, She-Ra.
No, Care Bears.
Gummy Bears.
Care Bears I had issues with. But really? That was more in later life due to a bad acid trip.
Right. That's not the Care Bears' fault. I'm just putting it out.
No, but I also just found the Care Bears kind of overly creepy.
Yeah, not creepy. Overly saccharine, looking back.
Yeah, like, and that creeped me out a little bit.
But
Gummy Bears definitely.
Gummy Bears
like,
were great.
See, this is the thing. Disney were just like one or the other. They were like, we're going to fuck you up, or we're going to give you the most wholesome entertainment. Aristocats, when there was, I'm sure there were parts of that as well that fucking bothered me. Anything was like animals suffering.
Yeah. I found it easier to deal with human suffering.
Yeah,
than animals
I've always been the
That's
same.
Still
always
true.
Always been the same. Like, if something shows an animal dying, I still get upset. But if something shows a person dying, I'm like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, you know. That's fine.
Because I think at a base level, you always understand that a person can do something to warrant harm being done to them. They can be deserving of harm. An animal can't.
I think
because an animal can only ever obey its nature.
A human can comprehend things in a way an animal can't. A human has an understanding of what's going on.
Yeah, like I when I've had dogs and I've been training them, I felt bad at shouting a dog, you know, trying to try. I hate it.
Yeah.
I hate it. But
I feel
you
like know. Yuki, our oldest cat, is sitting here now giving me the face. She wakes me up at 3 o'clock every morning by poking me in the bare arm with her claws. And she does it repeatedly until I get up. And it's completely reasonable that I would want to move her off the bed when she does it. And I'm still guilt-stricken every time because I don't want her to think that I don't love her.
Yeah, no, I completely get that. I like whenever I have to shoo one of the cats away for whatever reason, there's always a little pang of, but I still love you.
I hope you understand that you are my precious good boy.
Yeah, your girl.
Yeah.
Cats are awesome.
Yeah,
that's your happy note.
Cats are great.
That's the happy note to end on. Cats are awesome. So yeah, I hope you guys have enjoyed listening to us talk about some of the media from our childhood, which was fucking scarring as death. Like,
heavily scarring.
And we'll be as the week before. We'll be carrying on with our Jason the Weird Warriors run through. Probably following on with some other.
There's been some interesting Visionaries.
Visionaries might be a good next shout because it's short.
Yeah.
Mask and G.I. Joe are another long term, like there's a lot of it, so it's quite a few episodes. Visionaries we could cover in an episode because I think it's about the same length as
it's like
Ulysses.
Maybe 13 episodes.
Yeah, exactly. Same again for Bucky O'Hare. Mm-hmm. So you've got a lot of good cartoon goodness coming this way, and probably next week is going to be a mental health episode because I'm going to be going into some treatment, so I'm going to be talking about that a little bit. So there are going to be some sporadic mental health episodes coming out as well. Mm-hmm. That's the plan for the next few weeks. Hope the sounds for the episode's been good because I've just bought a whole new range of equipment and this has been the first run through test of it. So if the sound's off, it'll get better as I dial in the equipment. And apologies.
I think it'll be fine.
I'll be sure it'll be fine. So, yeah, hope you've enjoyed the show, guys. And we shall be back next week with Jace. No, next week, mental health. I just said it. Fuck. Yeah. This is why I'm getting treatment. And on that note, we're out. Peace.
Take care.